correctly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role. www.d20radio.com.
Roll for initiative. 19.
Greetings, RFI Nation, and welcome to the Roll for Initiative podcast, issue number 19. I am one of your hosts, DM Vincent, along with DM Jason, and DM Nick is back this week. DM Nick, how was your weekend away?
It was good. Had a wonderful time camping. And actually got to play D&D with the kids while camping, believe it or not.
Wow, with the
kids.
That
was going to be my first question. Did you play while you were camping?
Yes, we did. It was fun. The kids had a blast. We started up our long campaign on hiatus. Mm-hmm. But, kids loved playing first edition AD&D, so.
How old are the kids?
9 and 10.
Wow.
Yeah, both girls, and I might, God willing, I might get the wife to play.
The ultimate trifecta, right?
Yeah, well, I'm having her play a cleric, so.
Oh.
The party needs one.
Here, honey, take the cleric.
Yeah. Yeah, right. And yeah, I remember when I went camping as a kid, we played Marvel Superheroes a bunch of times around the campfire. That was kind of fun. The old TSR
cool.
game. Yeah, old TSR game. That was fun. And Jason, how was your weekend and week?
It's been a good week. Sitting here waiting for the thunderstorm to roll in that seems to never get here.
Yeah.
But pretty good.
That's what we got looming over here in the great state of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, send it over to me already.
You got what we had about 24 hours ago. Yeah, it was bad over here in Ohio. Real bad.
So last week's episode, we had Margaret Weiss on, and we had a great response from that. I think everybody really enjoyed that show.
Yeah, Margaret, I hope you're listening this week because I want to say thank you again. You were a great guest.
Margaret, I'm sorry I missed you, but I'm so happy that you were on our show, and it sounds like you had a wonderful time. I can't wait to tell my friend Jeff. He's the one that he's major fanboy. He named his first son after Raceland. No kidding.
Wow.
Yeah.
She would love that. We'll have to email her about it and tell her that. All right. Well, Jason, we spoke last week briefly about a letter that was actually handwritten and sent in. And this week you were actually going to give us that letter and read it out loud for us.
So I will put a picture of this up online. And we mentioned at the end of the show. Very happy to get it. So I have a letter here that came from Aptos, California, and the return address just is the letter S is the only name on here.
S.
So I will go ahead and get this out. This
on paper
is a
and
single.
Everything.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So I really was happy that we got our first written letter. I hope this is the first of many.
No, it was handwritten.
That's
not typed.
Yeah,
it was handwritten,
so
right?
Pull it out. And it's very old looking, you know. It's a very worn piece of sort of treasure map looking paper.
Really?
And and says on the front in a very nice longhand script.
Wow.
Dear RFI staff.
Who's that?
They say. That's
us.
We have a staff?
I guess so.
They say an image is worth a paragraph of NPC dialogue, but what about a handout? You have indeed spoken upon the subject before, if I recall correctly. It was with Jeff Grubb. Please correct me if I'm wrong. You're not wrong. I was hoping you could talk on making handouts for a homemade adventure, doing so in style, using handouts effectively in-game, how players look at handouts.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's it, those four things. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time. And then there's a nice little drawing of a monocle and a mustache. And at the bottom, it's signed, The Shadow.
The Shadow?
Yes.
Who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Oh, boy.
Exactly.
I guess he was...
And I want to point out that this handwritten letter has less well, zero spelling and grammatical mistakes, which is better than most of the people who write things with their spell check. So thank you, The Shadow. I respect you.
I wonder if he was a ninja slash pirate. Never mind.
I also like this one other nice thing about this letter. On the back, in small text in the corner, if I'd thought to look for it, which I did, it says recipe: paper, tea bags, hot water, microwave, cream and sugar. So, a little bit of instructions on how to make your own properly aged and antique-looking handout.
Yep.
So he sent us a recipe.
I agree with all those.
Well, thank you, Shadow. Maybe you're the Shadow from the Gamers Darkness Rising? No? Maybe not.
Could be.
Could be the Shadow. I don't know, but we appreciate it. But we're going to answer your request tonight in our segments. See what you get rewarded with. You take the time to handwrite something, and we reward.
We will do a whole feature around this, so we won't answer it now because there's a whole feature coming up in a few minutes in the show, a little later in.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I got a whole bunch of stuff on this. I love this topic.
Okay. And if anyone wants to actually handwrite a letter so Jason has to read it on the air again, write it to 200 East 10th Street, number 511, New York, New York, 1003.
Triple zero. You need all three. One triple zero three.
Yeah, I said that. 003.
And you're need another zero. One triple zero three.
Okay, whatever. Yes. 1003. I'm a
so if you want, just send your letters in folded inside of a first printing Deities and Demigods or a white box original D&D set.
Actually, what you should do is photocopy it and insert in there and go, there you go, Jason. Ha. Anyway, please do that. We appreciate anything you send in, even emails. And let's head over to the Sage Advice, where we have a couple emails to go over real quick.
Sage Advice.
Sage Advice. What do we have this week? We have two letters. First
the letters
one,
just keep on coming.
I know. Actually, they're emails, not letters. I apologize. Well, yeah. You know what I mean. The first one comes from the D20 Radio forums, where Vladius wanted to say that us as DMs, and Jason as an NPC, is a little bit too harsh on the later editions, especially 4th edition. And he says there are quite some improvements over the editions after 1st edition, and wants to know why we stand that way as far as somewhat not liking or supporting 4th edition or the later editions. Nick, how do you feel?
Well, where to start?
Yeah, he doesn't mean to start an editions war. He doesn't want to be attacked by 1D4 host either, but...
Oh well. Well, we'll... Okay, I will be diplomatic. How about that?
I think you have to roll the diplomacy check in order to do that, Nick.
There's a diplomacy check in the
Oh,
no,
I failed.
You don't. This is first edition. We actually act stuff out.
Oh.
Yes. Okay.
Can
Let
we just
me
leave it right there with that snotty comment there.
Okay. I'll try to keep it down like to a minute or two on this.
No, no.
Just from my personal experience.
Dusting off the box.
Yeah. Up on my soapbox here. When 3rd edition D&D came out, mm-hmm. I was excited about it. Don't get me wrong. I was. I was really looking forward to seeing what was going to go on in the new edition.
Right.
But when I saw, when I went down to the local game store.
Local game store.
And saw for the conversion, to convert your characters and what have you over to the newer edition,
yeah.
Was a 20-page book. And I still have it.
Yeah, I still have it,
20 pages. That kind of clued me in that there were some major changes going on here.
Don't forget... Some of them, it was a small pamphlet, though. It wasn't a regular-sized book.
I know, but 20 pages.
Yeah, all right.
You know, that, I was a little skeptical, and I read through it. It did everything. I even did a sample game, and it just wasn't to my liking. I really wanted to like it, but it just wasn't to my taste. So for many years, I steered clear of it.
Hmm.
But I did try it. And okay. Then we had 3.5 came out. What was it at? Like in 2003, 2004, something like that.
Doesn't matter.
And you know, there was nothing there that I saw any different or better from the revised third edition, which it basically became.
Yeah.
When fourth edition came out, and that's been 2 years now, correct?
Just about.
Almost 2 years, I think. It'll be 2 years this August.
Yeah. August.
When I saw what they were doing with it, not my cup of tea at all. It, to me, it's more, it's the quote, another guy who did a review of it. From, I don't know if you're familiar with the games review called Game Geeks. It's on YouTube.
Yes.
You probably know what review I'm talking about, where he said, this is more like World of Warcraft than World of Warcraft. And I have to agree with them. It was just way too different to what I'm used to. And, you know, yeah, I'm 39 and I'm set in my ways.
Yeah.
And I don't want to give up everything that I've already invested in the games that I already have. And who says they're any worse? You know, who says that they're outdated or they're not good enough? Just because it might be shiny under the hood, it might be a junk engine, you know?
Yeah, but yeah.
That's in the eye of the beholder, and that's where I'm coming from, and that's where I'll stand.
In defense of Wizards of the Coast, and this is not my opinion, just in defense of Wizards of the Coast, they had to go with the times, and they had to stay alive how they had to stay alive. That's just how
that's true.
That's their defense, and they're sticking to it. But thank you. And now we're going to head over to Jason, who has his response regarding this question.
Well, I don't know. As far as whether they had to change with the times to stay alive, I think that's it could be a little bit of circular reasoning, kind of like when Facebook says that they've made their privacy controls too bizarre because that's what, you know, the times have changed to become. You have to kind of wonder how much are the times changing and how much are they changing the times, you know. But I don't really want to go into too much about what's right or wrong.
No.
With what Wizards of the Coast has done with 4th edition, because first of all, I'll address that. And I think that 4th edition, if you didn't call it Dungeons & Dragons, could be a pretty cool game. If they had called it, you know, the Wizards of the Coast Fantasy Funtime Hour or whatever they want to call it, you know, if they didn't try to connect it to the real game, then I think that probably the first time I sat down and played 4th edition, I wouldn't have had any preconceived notions. I would have just gone into it saying this is sort of a weird variant on a D20 system, and it's set in not a regular fantasy world the way that I would have thought of it, but, you know, maybe something for the millennials or the, you know, the next group after them that grew up with video games. And, you know, in that sense, I'd be really happy to see people who were raised playing video games where you can never die and nothing bad ever happens and you're always going to get another go, I'd be happy to see them at least using their imagination and preparing and doing things with each other. So, yes, in that sense, I think 4th edition has a lot going for it.
Right.
If you try to compare it to AD&D, I just don't think you should compare the two. So for probably what the listener was talking about, and what was his name again?
Vladius.
Vladius, sorry. Well, first of all, I'm really happy that Vladius is listening when he prefers a later edition, but he's listening to our first edition podcast. So right there, I mean, I don't want to be saying terrible things about other editions because it doesn't really make any difference. You're going to play the game that is fun to play. I'm 39 and I'm not set in my ways. I'm really happy to pick up games that I've never played before. I just started playing
Balderdash.
I just started playing Blood Bowl recently. I know it's an old game, but, you know, we're playing the new version of it. I had a great time. It's not like anything else I've ever played. I mean, it's not a role-playing game. It's a fantasy football with orcs and stuff, but, you know, you guys know Blood Bowl.
Yeah, it's an awesome game.
Oh, yeah, it's real fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I was at Gen Con last year, I spent very little time playing games I already knew. I was having a good time going around trying things I would never have had a chance to play otherwise.
Yeah.
So I'm absolutely open to new things. But I don't know what he's talking about when he says that things were improved in later editions. I don't see anything in first edition AD&D that needs to be quote-unquote improved.
No.
Maybe he's worried about it being balanced in a way that he's not happy with, or mm-hmm. the fact that it's not balanced at all.
No,
You know, and I think that's a good thing, because it's all about the way that you approach a game. And mm-hmm. if you're approaching a role-playing game like D&D, you know, later edition of D&D, as I want to have a gameplay experience, I want it to be balanced, I want to have it, I want everybody to have a good chance of getting the treasure and winning or whatever, you know, however you approach it, maybe I could see some flaws in first edition. If you approach it the way that I do, which is I want to actually be transported in my imagination to another time and place, another world. I want to go somewhere in my imagination that has predictable rules behind it, just like the real world has rules. You know that when you fall off a cliff, you're going to get hurt. You know, I want the physics to make some sense in that world. Just as example, you know, I do also play in a fourth edition game, and like I said, it's still fun. But in the fourth edition game, we found out this weekend, or I found out this weekend, that apparently there's these things called minions that no matter how high level they are when they attack you, they could be 25th level, and yet they only have one hit point.
Yeah, one hit point.
And it was explained to me that, oh, that makes perfect sense. It's logical because this, that, and the other thing, and all these game balance reasons. And it just still kept hitting me. How would you ever... So I can hit him in the face really hard, and this 25th level monster goes down.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I want a system where if there's not a rule that's in place for it, you can figure out the rule by using real-world logic, not by having to sit around and go, well, what would be the proper encounter level, and what's the level of difficulty, and did everybody get a chance to, you know, cast a spell and use a power? That's just not the way things really work, and it would destroy my sense of fantasy and imagination and you know, make-believe to have those kind of things happen. So I prefer to go with a system that's been around now for, 34 years, that's had a lot of opportunities for people to look at it and say, you know, this is how to play within that rule set, and not bother with things that, quite honestly, I think 2nd edition, 3rd edition, 3.5 edition, these things were brought out basically so that there'd be new stuff to sell. And you got to sell things, you got to make money, but yeah. The first system,
works.
And if you've got something that works well, if you've got a warhorse or workhorse or however you want to put it, you got a workhorse that just is reliable, like Molly Ivan said, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
True.
Right. And I think you bring up another a point that somewhere in your conversation. I think you were alluding to something about how in the later editions where it seems like it puts more into game mechanics and less into the players trying to either figure something out, trying to act something out, try to explain something. When it gets too much into a game mechanic situation, you're just sitting there rolling dice.
Exactly.
Yeah. And half the time you're really not rolling the dice for any particular reason either. I do like having an actual rule system around things that's part of the fun for me too. I mean, you guys know that I'm a little bit of a, you know, a lover of charts and tables and that kind of stuff. And right. So maybe on that side, it's just the geekier side of me that likes having the more complex things to roll for.
Oh, I like that stuff too. I just like to have a balance. I just don't want to get so much into a game where the game mechanics are, there's so many different skills and
yeah,
it's what have you. It just becomes
overbearing.
It just becomes it just comes over burdensome. Ironically enough, I play Hackmaster, so figure that one out.
All right. Since you guys spoke, I'll speak now. Being the baby of the group, of only being 34 compared to you guys at 39.
Young pup.
Yeah. I have to say, 4th edition was not for me. I did play with my group. I thought there was too many options, too much of players going, what can I do? I have 10 things to do. What can I do this round? Like Jason said, everybody has to use a power or this or that, or someone should use this round, or what skill should I roll to get out of here? It's just, I like the role-playing aspect of 1st edition. That's why I really enjoyed going over to the World of Darkness role-playing games, because that's heavily based on role-playing as well. So, but I think 1st edition has a mix of good role-playing, and it has some good game mechanics. Didn't like 2nd. 3rd edition I played for a while, but like Nick said, it just really wasn't that great.
I mean, honestly, I think part of second edition, what turned me off when it first came out, was just the presentation of the books and the artwork and everything else. Yeah. It was pretty ugly stuff.
Ooh. The artwork tended to be a little bit, and I've heard this from a lot of people too, and I agree with them. I'm with those people that say the artwork's just kind of, I'd say generic.
Yeah,
I guess is a good term for some of it. I mean, some of it's really good. I mean, because Elmore is an artist that went from first to second edition as well, and he's a great artist. Don't get me wrong. He might be who knows? We might get him on the show someday.
not anymore.
I think it was just the layout of the books and everything. I mean, they came out around the time when the desktop publishing revolution was happening, and everybody was going way too far with designing their books way too much. I mean, I was doing stuff back then, and I committed that sin of over-designing things. But I like the way that the first edition books were done before that time. So if there's artwork, it's because somebody painted it or drew it. It's not because somebody had a computer that put a lot of backgrounds and fonts on stuff. So, but that's a whole other story. The one other thing I wanted to say was that this is kind of timely because I was listening to Fear the Boot. I don't know if I was listening to the latest one or the one before. It's a great show, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Very good show. Love listening to them.
Completely fun. We have to go to Fear the Con sometime. But I was listening to Fear the Boot, and they were talking about Chad was running a D&D game, and they were really shocked about it. So they got into the whole thing of, who likes D&D and who doesn't. And I've been meaning to drop them a line because one of the guys in the show said the reason he didn't play Dungeons & Dragons, that he didn't like it, is because he didn't feel like it was a generic system. He felt like it was a system that had you on rails and you had to do things exactly the way that was set up in there. And he was, for the latest version, he was right. And I want to call him up or, drop him a line and say, guys, why don't you come play a first edition game with us? And you can see that you could actually – it doesn't have to be trapped in a world of powers and feats. You can actually go ahead and apply some logic to it and play it the way you want. So maybe we'll give him a call.
So – to sum things up, we're not harsh on 4th edition. We just, it's not our cup of tea. And to avoid certain things, we just call it the edition that shall not be named to avoid any confusion or wars or anything, pretty much. So we thank you for your question. Let's move on to the next, or the final one we have tonight. And then it comes in from 14-year-old Crispin, and I'm going to put that in air quotes.
Hey, Crispin.
Yes. And he's only 14 years old, and he said that his grandfather started playing AD&D back when he was younger, and he actually played through his prison time, so I guess his grandfather was in prison. And then he got his books from his grandfather, so they were hand-me-down books, all original. And he was playing it, and he played it with his stepfather and his little younger brother, who was 9, and he enjoys it. He inherited all his grandfather's characters and magical items, so he just wanted to let us know that the old school revolution is alive in younger kids.
Crispin, right on. We're really glad to have you listening. And yeah, awesome. I mean, I've noticed a couple of the listeners that are on the Facebook site seem to be high school age and around that, and it's awesome to see that people are picking it up at the same age that we did, when we first picked it up.
That's really cool, too. And Crispin, again, thanks for sending us your message. I mean, this is, I think, and then I've seen it too, Jason, that there seems to be a certain segment of teenagers that are playing the current edition in D&D or 3.5 or 3.0.
Pathfinder.
They hear about us old grognards talking about the days of yore, And I see it on message boards like Dragon's Foot or wherever it could be. And some of them want to try to recapture. They want to they want to capture some of that magic. They want to feel some of that. For some of us, it's nostalgia, but we're still living it.
I think what it is old is cool now. So
yeah, there seem to be
how old do I have to get before I'm cool?
Another 5 years.
Well, there seemed to be a retro movement ever since third edition came out. Since around 2001, 2002, there was a retro gaming movement that slowly started up and
exploded
a few years ago with all the retro clones. Yeah. And that's part of that old school renaissance that's going on today. And I am so excited that he's part of that.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the other thing about the old school games, the retro games, is they came out at a time when the tabletop gaming industry wasn't very big. It was, you know, it was a nascent industry, just born. There wasn't a lot of money in it. Everybody, it was, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again. I think it had more of that punk DIY ethos to it. You know, that you could do it yourself, you could own it yourself. If you wanted to write a module and just Xerox it and publish it that way, you could do that. And since, you know, in the decades since, it's been a blessing and a curse that it got so big. It's a blessing because it means that the gaming community grows all the time. But at the same time, you know, it just doesn't feel as much like it can be your own thing. So, you know, going back to those retro things, this is kind of my thing. It's more special.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we got the best of both worlds. Yeah, I think we got the best of both worlds now. We got this retro, old-school renaissance movement with the internet. I mean, talk about a match made in heaven or whichever higher plane you want to pick.
I believe it's a match made in the happy hunting grounds.
Yes.
Okay. So your alignment would be what?
No, I'd have to, don't make me break out my manual of the planes.
Oh boy. All right, that's gonna wrap up Sage Advice. If you have any questions, comments, rfistaff@gmail.com, or you can call us 206-279-3272. Have your question played. Or you can click on the website call me button and it'll call you right back on your phone. Be prepared to say something, and don't forget to leave your name and email address if possible. And we'll head into table manners.
Typical. Of all the evil creatures in the world, I'd like to find one with table manners.
What, are you kidding me? I spent years cultivating the worst table manners on the planet.
Table manners.
So for table manners, this will do part one of the shadows questions. What he wants us to talk about tonight. NPC dialogue is what we're looking at here, or how to make NPCs more exciting, he had mentioned in his letter. So, how do you guys handle your NPCs? Do you add some flavor to them by making it up on the fly? Do you pre-plan your dialogue? What is your style, and how do you do it? We'll start with Jason.
Yeah, Jason.
Well, index cards are a big thing for me. Right. I use them in my work. I use them in my hobbies. I use them in my games because the thing I like about index cards is you can only put a little bit of stuff on an index card, and you can grab them sort of random access. So I don't write out NPC dialogue because I don't think that people necessarily enjoy being read to in that sense. But I do have to have some idea of what's going to go on. So I'll make some sort of outline type of notes. Try to make a couple of notes about if I know that there's going to be certain characters that they're going to run into, I'll try to have some notes sitting aside about their personality. And maybe if I don't act out voices and things like that. But, you know, you still, just like when you're reading a book to somebody, you know, you do a little bit. And so if it's an old man, a young man, you know, an aged crone, you know, you want to make notes about that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah.
And generally, that's all I do is I just kind of keep outlines, maybe names that I have to remember, that kind of thing. But other than that, I really try to, you know, make it up on the fly.
Right. Well, for me, I usually will put out a list of names, or I use actually a supplement that came from AEG called the I can't think of the name of it. It's a tome book. It's like $40. The book, they gave it to me as a promotional item when I went to a convention.
You talked about that before,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I can't think of the name of the book. It's a really big book. One of the listeners actually corrected me, too, about it. I haven't looked at it in a while, but it has everything in it. So I get my list of names out of there, pre-prepare them, and I write down little jot, like Jason said, like the guy has an eye patch or something that distinguishes him from everybody else, and I'll write maybe a little characteristic about him. And most of the stuff I'll just do on the fly. I don't really pre-write anything because I don't know where the character's going to go, or a character can go here and they never use this NPC. So, you know, that's how I do it for that. I don't like to pre-write anything out at all.
All right.
Nick?
Well, I used to do some pre-written scripts, just some basic dialogue things. Maybe that would be important to move the plot. Just, you know, makes maybe an important plot point, something like that. But I felt, and this was a very brief thing, and after a while, I just didn't do it anymore. It just seemed too railroady in the dialogue.
Yeah. And,
you know, it just sounded, you know, it just sounded too, you know, it was scripted. I mean, it just didn't work very well. So just said, you know, I had to go with my gut. You know, I'm just like, you know what? I've done acting in the past, and if anybody can't tell already by this podcast, I'm a bit of a ham. So, and then keeping in the factoring in things like players and unpredictable, they're going to say whatever pops in their head. So I keep the dialogue like you guys do. I keep, you know, unscripted, but have some basic idea, concept about a particular NPC or a couple NPCs that they're probably going to run into in a session, how they're going to be. And I kind of get into that character as the NPC. And I will use accents. I'll use an English accent for aristocracy. Or the French one that's very nice.
Oh, boy.
You know, or Scottish. You know, you talk like this with a little Scottish brogue like that. You know, like if you're a dwarf.
Excellent.
Or if you like Irish, you know, I might use that for a thief now. So, or you know, a little bit of Italian, you know.
So we've covered all the races that we can insult. No, I'm just kidding.
And, you know, and I think, you know, you're making a good point right now, which is if you're sitting around the table, don't worry about it if you're – I mean, your accents are actually pretty good. I'm really impressed. But, I mean, don't worry about it if your accents are not. Yeah. I have not. And so, you know, I don't do accents well at all. I can just do the generic foreigner accent. But, you know, I probably come out like Latka from Taxi every time I try to do an accent.
Oh, boy.
But so what? I mean, you know, if your players laugh around the table, if you're bad at accents, just do really ridiculous ones sometimes.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
If you run into the old crone, oh, my dearies, what have we got here? I mean, obviously a bad accent. Just do it, you know?
Wow. That's right. Go with it. Go over the top with it. I agree. And, you know, it's another one that works really well. Imitate famous actors is a real good one. You know, you do it like Sean Connery. You sound like him. You know, you're an old, wizened wizard.
That's right, Junior.
That's right. I was a submarine.
I know we have William Shatner here today.
Oh, no. William Shatner has not checked in as of yet. I've checked the front desk, and he is not here.
Or you can do Christopher Walken. He's kind of crazy. He's nuts.
Yeah.
Pow! No. So.
You know, The flip side, though, too, we were talking about not writing down the stuff so it doesn't sound like you're reading it. The flip side to that also is if you have gone to the trouble of preparing written dialogue for an NPC, you're going to be really annoyed if the characters never go up and talk to that NPC.
Or
you know, that's going to be part of the railroading thing, too. You want to avoid temptations that, you know, when you've got something there and your players just don't go anywhere near it, you want to avoid the temptation of forcing them into an encounter.
Yeah. Or like if they don't run into the NPC at all, or they might go say something completely different, do something off tangent, and you're left with a script where you're going,
yeah.
You know, you're going, wow. you know what you're going to say.
Yeah. So the last bulletin point for this NPC dialogue is acting, which we kind of covered briefly while we were talking about this, but acting is out things as a DM. When I was at a convention.
Acting!
Masterpiece theater. I was at a convention recently, and there was a DM there that was actually DMing another edition that shall not be named. he.
Wah, wah.
Yeah, wah, wah. He actually had hats and swords, and he was running back and forth at the table and acting things out. And it was actually like going to like a show. I mean, I had a bag of chips there. I thought I was at a dinner and a show, pretty much. So, do you guys do any acting as far as more than just voices? I do not personally, unless it's involving a LARP, which I don't do, but I did do one, so that's it.
You know, I do. It all depends on the encounter, I think. If it's an important NPC, yeah, I'll probably ham it up a little, you know. If it isn't, I'll just say, well, such and such person is directing you here. It really all depends.
Right.
I don't have any firm and fast rule as far as the difference between speaking in the first person and the third person for NPCs. I'll go back and forth.
I do dislike
going into groups and GMs or DMs are like, you say your character, well, you're a butthead or whatever, and he's like, oh, you said that in character. It's just like, no, I didn't. I was just kidding.
No.
Oh, you didn't do the timeout symbol. It's just like, oh.
That's just a little.
It depends. I mean, if you're using that as a way to get your players to stop with all of the out of game talk and table talk and that kind of thing. You know, the occasional bit just to kind of remind them that you're actually here playing a game. That's okay. I mean, we had this that happened this weekend when we all went into a castle and were asked to. To check our weapons before we came in, and the magic user, or whatever they call it in the new edition, said, oh, here's my spell book, too, making a joke. And then later on, the DM was like, no, you gave him your spell book. You did. You said it. And, okay, why not? Because, so a little bit of that. But as far as, acting or whatever, it can be intimidating at first, and it's why it's a good idea, I think, I think that's one of the reasons that I kind of like to have the rule of we don't have hangers-on at the game. I really don't like to have spectators and friends hanging around because if they're not into the game and then if as a DM you have to start acting out one of your characters, I feel a little more self-conscious doing it.
Yeah.
So I prefer to have only the players at the table.
Well, see, while you said spectators, that's actually how we got someone involved in one of our groups. We had them watch the game and just play NPCs at random.
Mm-hmm.
And he would learn. He learned the game that way by just we gave him an NPC. The DM would talk to him for a few minutes, and he played a major NPC for like a half hour just to try the game.
Oh, that's good. Talking more about having wives or husbands or friends or whatever that just happen to be in the room because you're playing at somebody's house. And maybe I'm not as outgoing or show offy as some people, but I prefer not to have a lot of people around.
When we were talking about this little section about NPCs and acting out their mannerisms and how they are, it popped into my head DMG on pages 100 and 101.
Okay,
I got my DMG right here. There is, if you didn't remember this, Jason, there are tables here to help generate things about an NPC, like their intellect, bravery, their thrift, general tendencies. I almost forgot about this. This is a great tool in the Dungeon Master's Guide to help, at least get if you're kind of stuck, you don't know what you're going to do with this NPC beforehand, roll it up randomly, see how they are. And that might give you at least a direction to go with,
Yeah.
It just gives you some things to play off of. I like it.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, let's see what you do with your games, rfistaff@gmail.com. And we're going to head into a Creature Feature Theater tonight.
Creature Feature Theater. Welcome to the Creature Feature for this week. So normally, we're going to try something a little bit different, because normally, for the Creature Feature, we start out by saying which monster that we're going to be talking about for the week. Mm-hmm. And, we go into a little bit of a description and things we would do with it and DM talk and that kind of thing. So yeah. I thought I'd try something a little bit different, and this is untested. We haven't, for our audience out there, we haven't rehearsed this, so we don't know if it's going to work or if it's going to be a massive crash and burn, but let's try it anyways.
We don't even know the monster.
We're testing it now.
testing it now. So what I've done, I've sent you guys a couple of pre-rolled characters, and we're going to have you just encounter this monster in real time, and then we'll talk about what actually you have run into afterwards. So
sweet.
Now we have, I believe that Vince, you are playing a thief called Bandor.
Bandor.
A 10th level thief.
Uh-huh.
And Nick, you have a fighter named Glentus.
Yes, Glintus the Fighter.
Glintus the Fighter. Okay.
Huzzah.
Huzzah, indeed. And the two of you are within a larger party, but I won't worry too much about the rest of the NPCs that are in the party with you. Because we're just
Maybe we did something stupid like split the party.
You might have split the party.
We Scoobied it.
So you are in the middle of an adventure right now. You are over near the Spindrift Sound in the land of Greyhawk. And have been investigating a fortress by the sea over near Rel Astra.
Okay.
And you've entered the fortress about a day ago, and you've managed to find your way down into the caverns beneath. And they're not a dungeon. These are very naturally occurring caverns. You've spent about a day going through, and you found a resting place for the night. You came in through a narrow passageway in the caverns until you entered a large natural opening, a large natural cavern about 80 feet in all directions. So 80 feet wide, 80 feet long, 80 feet from top to bottom.
It's a very dark,
humid, cave-like atmosphere.
Stalactites and stalagmites?
A little bit, but not so much because you actually have a stream that's running through the center of this cavern, and it's going pretty fast. Actually, I'd say it's more than a stream; it's almost a river. It's moving very fast, and you're right near the ocean.
So it's a living cave. Got it.
It's a living cave. You can tell that this is probably coming from or going to the ocean. You can smell the salt water.
My intelligence is bleh.
What is it exactly? Seven.
Yeah, six.
My intelligence is seven too.
Well, they got a wisdom of six. I got a con of seven, and I'm 10th level. And I'm still alive. Oh my god!
What's your strength? Look at your strength.
Oh, 1853.
I'm big. I don't know how the thief made it.
Big, dumb, and powerful.
Full disclosure: I pulled these out of the rogues gallery, so that was easier than rolling them up.
Yeah. Okay.
Dude, I'm 10th level. So, my AC is 8.
Stay with me.
I suck.
Well, I appreciate you guys proving that we didn't rehearse this. That's Okay, so you're in a large cavern. There's a fast moving river that bisects the cavern. There's one passageway that you entered through, and there's only one other passageway out of this naturally occurring cave. It's on the other side of the river. There's a small stone bridge that has actually been built over it. And at the end of the night last night, you chose to rest here. It seemed like the best place. So you encamped on the far side of the river near the opposite passageway.
Considering our intelligence, yes.
Yes. after encamping for the evening, after several hours of resting and sleeping lightly,
Keep an eye on my pouch because of thief.
Bandor, you are awoken from a very light slumber by a nibbling and a squeaking sound. You hear a little squeak, 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 squeak of rats and scurrying around. And as you awake, you see the rats are nibbling at your pack and sniffing around both you and your companion.
Oh. And I'm asleep.
So you awake to this, see the rats.
Oh, this is me, right?
Yes, this is you.
Oh, sorry. Well, first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to open my eyes a little wider and peer around to see if there's anything else bigger looming around with these rats at my pack.
Opening your eyes wider, you see the fire still burning that you set for the night, and it's fine. You can the area's lit reasonably well, and you see no other creatures, just the little rats scurrying, and they haven't noticed you awaken yet.
So they're very normal-sized, small rats, right?
Normal, little, smelly, horrible rats.
I swat at them away.
It's the moment you get up and swat at them, the rats scurry off for cover, and they're gone.
Would you like
to wake up Glintus?
No, I'm not going to wake him up, because, I mean, I just checked my pack to see the damage.
Okay, looking at your pack, you can see that they didn't really manage to get into it. You must have been a very light sleeper, because you awoke as soon as the rats showed up. They clearly have not been here all night. They didn't get into
your things. Makes sense as a thief.
Yeah, they didn't get into your things at all.
All right, I tend to the fire, make sure it's still burning, and I do a quick sweep around, since I'm awake, just to make sure we're still safe.
Okay, and you're a thief, so I believe I gave you your chance to listen and such. So I'll just go ahead and I will roll for you.
I have dice.
Well, this is the way we're doing hear noise, and so I'd rather not tell you if you've succeeded the roll or not. And you hear nothing, just the normal. You can actually hear the rats still scuttling away. You can notice, actually, since you're being very alert, that there's little, really tiny rat kind of passage holes. Nothing you could ever get through, but you can see where they went, and they've gone. And by the way, you hear snoring. You've actually had a full night's sleep now at this point. You're fully rested. You know, you were able to bring enough scrolls and potions with you that any damage you took the day before, you know, is not bothering you. So you're fully rested, and you could consider this morning now. And you see the passageway that you came in through on the other side of the river, and you can see the other passageway leading out to the north. And it's a little bit – it's a hot area still. You're still in a musty, humid cave, but the passageway leading to the north seems – slightly fresher, not wonderfully so, but you can tell that might be a bit of a fresher path than where you are.
I got my broadsword out and lantern at the ready.
You're awake?
Okay.
I hope so.
Yeah, he must have heard all of the chatter from the DM.
Yeah, that must be what it was.
You said it was the next day. I'm assuming I woke up.
Yeah.
I go over to my stuff and I secure my gear on and grab my short sword of many hitting, and I look at Glentis. Or Glentor, or whatever his name is.
Glentis.
Yes. We ready to move on?
Absolutely, good sir.
Okay, so if you're ready to move on, I assume that you'll go through the passageway. And I'm going to put you on rails a little bit here because we are doing this as part of the creature feature.
Right, yeah, that's
no
fine.
No problem.
But as you enter the passageway, talk to the engineer, do not pull the cord. As you enter the passageway, it's about the same size as the one before. You're able to walk side by side if you want to. It's a natural, it doesn't seem like it's been cut out very expertly, although it does seem that at some point digging occurred. But the passageway is not perfectly straight. It's very winding and rocky as you go along.
But okay. It looks like it was someone or something dug through.
These are used, yes.
Okay.
Okay, what's our motivation for this scene? Kidding.
What's my motivation?
Yes. So we're traveling down this tunnel. We're observing the landscaping and everything. And
we're going to kill monsters and loot their bodies. What's the problem?
You're on a dungeon crawl. You're looking for the MacGuffin to bring back. Okay.
Oh, I love MacGuffin with a little bit of butter.
Yes.
All right. So as you're moving along, I'm going to just go ahead and roll hear noise if rolls for you.
Sweet.
And if you want to do anything else, like moving silently or checking for traps or any of that, or you're going to have to let me know about that. But otherwise, I'm going to move you forward at just about, you know, your normal speed for mapping.
Okay.
And as you move forward down the hallway, or down the passageway, I should say, you don't hear any particularly unusual noises. You just hear as you get further away, you can hear the rushing of the river in the cave behind you. And you.
Is there any, like, unusual smells or anything like that at all?
Unusual smells.
It's
musky and it's sweaty. I mean, you can smell each other. You've been in this cave.
It smells
for
like
a day.
The monkey house at the zoo.
I'm telling you.
There's the smell of salt water. You know, from the river behind you. I should point out that you actually haven't. I mean, it's morning. You haven't eaten anything yet. You haven't had anything to drink.
Ooh, we need a
rat. Oh, I have some iron rations then.
Okay, so Glentis, as you stop and take your iron rations out of your pack and try them out, when you get the tin open, you actually they're putrefied.
They
were fine when you came in, but they've just turned to mush. They've got
so they like just decomposed overnight.
They've just been ruined.
I checked mine.
Absolutely ruined. Yours are exactly the same, just filthy.
Yeah, because I mentioned it. Yeah, I mentioned it to this thief. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah, they're just absolutely ruined. It's like somebody ate it and put it back.
I'm not that smart, but this bad.
Are you the same person? No.
So your rations are ruined. You're carrying a wine skin and a water skin as well.
I checked the water.
I checked my wine skin and everything. See if the
wine that you've brought. The wine that you've brought. It smells terribly, and taking a small taste of it, it's turned to vinegar.
Ugh.
And your water's.
Your water is. How do I put this nicely? It's been piddled in. The water has been completely befouled. It's you wretch even trying to drink from your water.
Jason, I'm going to take a look at the ground and see if there's any footsteps or draggings or scrape marks on the ground of something that's been through here other than us.
Okay. I'm going to call this a find, remove traps, and I like to let thieves roll their own traps. So go ahead and roll a D100, please.
Certainly. A 57.
57.
Yes.
And you looking on the ground, you see no unusual footprints. Nothing's been dragged around or anything. It's very normal ground.
Want to do a hidden doors? Check for any hidden doors, maybe?
Yes.
Okay. Go ahead and roll a percentile.
Do that thievy stuff you do.
Yes, I will do my find first, and then if I don't get that, I'll try the other method. No, I roll a 72.
Okay, so you're not able to detect anything like that.
Well, I guess dump out the rotted food and anything else look rotted on us? It's just the food and the drink
food and
has
water.
Been...
Your food, your water, your wine, all spoiled.
All spoiled.
Undead.
Could be.
Oh, if only there were a cleric. Yes. If you only hadn't split the party and left the cleric behind. Well, you stand here in the middle of the passageway. You've dumped your things on the ground. Do you want to continue on or turn back?
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm going to reorganize my backpack without the rotted food and what have you. And
okay.
I'm intrigued. I think we should press on whatever it is. What about you, good thief?
Bandor?
Sorry, forgot your name.
That's quite all right, considering we just met 5 minutes ago. I press forward.
Moving forward at a nice, normal pace that allows you to map and to observe your surroundings in a normal fashion, you continue down the passageway, which winds and bends. The smell of the river behind you, you can tell you're getting further away. And hold on, what was your dexterity?
Okay.
Who's? As you...
The fighter?
Nobody's, never mind.
Okay.
However, Bandor, your coin purse at your hip, the seams finally give way, and all of your coins, gold, some platinum, electrum, just scatter onto the ground.
I dive
all
at
around
it.
You.
Being a greedy little thief, I dive at it.
You dive for it?
Yes.
Thief, what the heck are you doing?
You're paying out like a slot machine, you know.
So
but it's your own money.
Oh.
If you look at your coin purse, you can see that the seams just kind of gave way. It's hard to tell exactly why it opened up at this point. You didn't bump into anything.
What the heck?
I checked my coin purse.
Well, yours is the one that split open.
Yeah.
If you want to look at it carefully, roll a find remove traps again.
Me, right?
Yes.
Okay. 33.
You can tell when you're looking at it that it looks like it didn't just wear out on its own. It's as though the stitching was cut with some sort of tiny, tiny scissors.
Like mouse-like chomps?
Who knows? It was a very clean cut, but you weren't meant to notice it. But you have. But you've gathered your coins back up. I'm assuming put them in something else.
Yeah.
It takes you a couple of rounds to do that. And as you continue on down the passageway, I assume, I'm putting on rails because we are on a podcast. We don't want to run out of time.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the ground really closely as we head on. keeping an eye on the floor, see if I notice anything like scurrying about.
Okay. You don't see anything.
As we press on.
As you press on, I will try to take into account the fact that you are looking carefully. You do have lights and all of that. And as you press on, Glentis, your pack, the straps holding it on, one of them fails and gives way, and your pack falls off.
What the deuce?
And your things fall across. So now your backpack has not – you can no longer wear it properly.
What the heck is rotting things away or cutting things away on us?
Well, before our clothes are the next thing that fall off, I think maybe we should go back.
Yeah, okay. I'm like, I get the pack off and I take the lantern. I'm looking at the backpack, see if there's anything there.
All right, let's activate our spider sense and decide if we should. Our intuition tells us to go forward or go back. Back.
You think it's back?
Yeah, let's gather. I help him gather up his stuff that fell on the ground, and we start heading back because we don't think it's safe to go forward.
Okay, as you're heading back, you're going back towards the large cavern again, I believe. All right. And as you're walking back, are you going any faster now that you don't have to map it, or do you want to still map?
Yeah.
Make sure it's the same things.
No, we'll follow the map that we had, but we're not going to map since we've already mapped.
Yeah. Okay.
So going back, let's see here. I'm actually going to do this as a saving throw. Okay. So let me pull out my saving throw. What would be your save versus let me pick a good one. I should have actually
Please don't say death.
I'm going to say have your save versus paralyzation for the thief. Let me see. I should
have 10th level thief?
I don't have it. It wasn't written on the stuff.
It is 11 or better.
Okay, so go ahead and roll a d20, please.
All right. Look at my d20 here. 10.
You failed to notice the you trip. You trip.
The thief
you
tripped.
The thief.
Oh god.
You fall forward. There was a very tight sort of tripwire before you. You fall onto your face. And roll initiative, please.
All of us?
No, you want one for the party or you want to do...
No, we're going to actually do one for the party and I'll do one. So whichever one of you wants to roll the initiative.
Go ahead, Nick. I just rolled.
D6, right?
Yeah.
6.
And I've rolled a 3. However, I'm going to go ahead and run the surprise round as part of this as well. Okay. And in the first surprise segment, I've hidden your name. There we go. Glentis, a net falls from above.
Now I know what these things are.
What's your armor class, please?
Armor class is 4.
Armor class is 4. You are caught by the net. The net manages to cover both of you. And you are covered by the net, you see coming from the little rat holes and things that you'd seen before, a few rats start to scurry out, followed by many tiny creatures, no more than a foot high, humanoid in appearance.
I know what they are.
Have a baggy clothes on and what look like little helmets, and they're speaking in a language you've never heard before that sounds something between humans and rats.
You know what they are, Vince?
Actually, I don't know offhand.
I know what they are.
Player knowledge versus character knowledge, please.
Don't know.
I know what they are. I won't say anything. I didn't know.
And I will give you. I will actually give you a round of action here within the net. What would you like to do?
I am going to try to toss the net off of me.
Okay. Well, you're a bit tangled up in the net, but we'll give that a try. And to the thief, you're able to reach for your weapons enough. I don't think that you could probably get pulled out of the net, actually.
I'm going to pull out my dagger and try to swipe my way out of this.
Okay. And as you reach for your dagger and try to pull it out of its scabbard, you notice that it's stuck really badly. What you hadn't noticed before is that it's actually been jammed through the leather. And before either of you can get to your weapons, you are set upon by something like 40 of these tiny little creatures. And clubs ready and darts flying at you. And now we're going to step out of proper gameplay because I'm going to take you to the next point of what happens. I'm going to skip over most of the combat here and let you know that what happened was you were knocked out very quickly and you've both awoken. The net is gone. So are some of your possessions, but not all. Your gold and your food and those types of things are gone. Your clothes are gone and you have been shaved. Your heads have been shaved.
Nice.
Your eyebrows have been shaved. You are naked and shorn and laying in the middle of the passageway as you await.
Oh, terrific.
And scene. Okay, so go ahead, Nick. What just
Germaine.
Yes.
Germaine. Yep. Darn Germaine from the Fiend Folio. I'll be damned.
Yes.
You know what? It didn't click until...
That's right.
You were talking about our packs and stuff getting cut. I'm like, it's got to be something small.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were heading back. He tripped over a little tripwire. I'm like, oh, God. And then the rat's coming out. And I remembered companions of the Germaine are rats. They use normal or giant rats as companions. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Rats and also Osquip.
Osquip. Yeah. Oh my God, that's right.
Yes. So Todd Hughes, the Fiend Folio fan,
yes,
and I were talking about this, and he suggested it, and I thought it was a great suggestion. I love the Germaine now.
Yes. You know,
give us a quick rundown of the stats and everything like that.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, sure. So the Germaine, well, as you heard, they're very small creatures. They are only about a foot tall. I described them as wearing baggy clothing and having little helmets. In fact, they were pretty much naked. That was their skin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, lady, you got to run in your stocking. I'm not wearing stockings. Their hit dice are very low. They only have 1 to 4 hit points, which is, you know, a little bit odd if you think about it. The place where they were first introduced actually was in the descent into the depths of the earth.
Yeah,
which was actually for 10th level characters and pretty seriously high level characters like that. But these Germaine, they're never going to come right at you. They live with rats. They live in the natural burrows and caverns that rats create. They are somewhat intelligent. They have average level intelligence, and they basically are. They exist just to bother people, to be on the edge, and they will sneak up, and they will find adventurers while they're asleep. They'll cut just enough on their purse strings so that they can cause trouble, but not enough so that they will be noticed. And they basically go and they scavenge and they grab and they try to get people into this type of trouble. And as I said, they're never going to come straight at you, but they are absolutely vicious, terrible little things once they get a hold of you. They like to get in and despoil food, turn wine into vinegar, all the things that happen to you. And one of their signature moves is that if they do manage to catch you in a trap, and they have a terrible sense of humor. And what they like to do is to leave it, once they've knocked adventurers unconscious, to shave them completely and leave them out, often tied up, for the rats to go and devour. And they think that it's just great fun to watch that sort of thing. So,
how nice.
Yeah.
Yes. They're also known as Jinxkins or Bane Midges. Just terrible little things. One final thing I want to say about them. I did do a little bit of digging around to find out where they first came from, where Gary Gygax first came up with the idea. And in one of the epic interview sessions on N-World, he revealed that they were inspired by gremlins. And the idea is that maybe they're sort of like a proto-gremlin, a more primitive, nasty, terrible little relative of the gremlin. So that
the
is
the Crow Magnon version of the gremlin.
Yes. Yes.
All right, that was cool. We'll have to do this again sometime. That was cool. Have to move on to our next segment now. And our final segment of tonight, which would be the arts and crafts section. We did this in an earlier podcast way back in issue whatever, Jason, right? It was just me and you back then.
Yes.
And it's Dungeon Mastering Advice. So we're going to talk about what the Shadow wanted to talk about.
The Shadow?
The Shadow.
The Shadow!
Making handouts for a homemade adventure. Doing it in style and using handouts effectively in game and how players look at handouts. So, do we make handouts or do we not make handouts? That is the question.
Okay.
Who wants to start?
I'll start
with the easy part because I don't make handouts. Okay. So, Nick, tell me how to do it.
Okay. You know, I've done this, and it works at times. I do enjoy making my own sort of handouts or modifying, you know, what we have. I mean, even in the original first edition AD&D adventures, you know, if you use those sorts of things, some of those adventures do have, you know, pretty good handouts, like, you know, pictures of different areas, like Hidden Shrine of Tomoachan is a good example, where there's player handouts as far as, like, depicting a particular room. A really good adventure that has more than just, you know, pictures of a particular room, but it actually has some, like, a map handout or something like that, was Sinister Secret of Salt Marsh.
Yeah.
And it has a couple of really good maps in there.
And the code.
Yes.
The lighthouse code.
Mm-hmm. The lighthouse code. Very good. Yeah. And when I do this, and I do this sparingly, I use maps, I think, are the best to do this with as far as handouts. But letters are good, too. If you make out a letter, I've done this in one of my campaigns where there was a letter written by a real, basically the big baddie that they're going to run into eventually, written to another minion about how they're going to deal with this group of adventurers. And they came across this letter. And I do this, the maps too, is I'll make them look a little bit weathered, a little bit worn. And there's various different ways that you can go about doing this. And I think the Shadow gave some examples of some things that you can use to give some authenticity to the documents that you're going to present to your characters. You know, like tea bags, the hot water, using a microwave and cream and sugar. You can make some sort of kind of mess, mm-hmm. and you let it dry over a certain amount of time. Some other liquids or materials that work really well that I've used, Coca-Cola is good.
Coffee.
Coffee, yep. Yeah. Ink, dirt, wine, beer, oil, either, you know, like cooking oil, even motor oil. I've put little drops here and there. Sometimes writing notes in charcoal works really well.
Blood.
Blood. I didn't want to go there.
Well, I think that would be the corn syrup and the food dye that you want to use. But,
okay. Pricking your finger might work,
but something to simulate that sort of thing if you want to.
Or real
blood. And there's always the time-honored, burning the edges.
Yes.
Yep, done that too, burning the edges, putting drops of water or lightly soaking it. What I'll do is I remember making a map for a party of characters where they had two of the characters were dwarves and they inherited a mine, and all they had to this old ancient mine that they inherited, a silver mine, was an old map. Mm-hmm. And what I did it was from another adventure, and I love this nowadays because now most of us have access to printers and scanners and what have you. I scanned the original, so I didn't want to damage the original.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important to do if you do something like this, unless you make your own. But I was scanning something and printing it. And then I will maybe take maybe a sponge or wet paper towel, and on the back of it where it was printed, I'll go over it with the wet sponge or paper towel and you know, maybe let it dry overnight. It'll kind of crinkle and maybe it'll become uneven. Then maybe, you know, use your other things, like I'm talking about the Coca-Cola ink and dirt and what have you, and just have fun with it. Experiment with it.
And you know what I just thought of? Now that you're saying this, you've totally put me back into, you know, 12-year-old reading copies of Boy's Life mode. Because when you mentioned maps, I started thinking about the whole invisible ink trick with the lemon juice.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
That would work too.
That would be a great. I mean, now this would be interesting because, and you're really getting my imagination going now, because, like I said, I don't normally use handouts except for, you know, the kind of things you mentioned before from modules. And would there some way to get your players to actually think to hold the paper up to the light?
Yeah.
You know, because how would you do that?
You know, and I don't know. Because
you got to kind of get into that cross. You got to get into that cross between, you know, player and character. You know,
right.
You're thinking to actually. Well, I'm interested also in handouts that aren't necessarily just letters. The whole idea of what's something that, you know, I can't explain this to you very well. Let me just show you. Here's an example of something like
right.
it.
Right.
You know, sure. Handing and over a piece of food or metal or cloth. Let's say maybe.
Yeah, using props cloth. Like that. Absolutely. I don't use a lot of like other props besides maps or maybe some like folded up letters or scrolls. And again, I'd say use this stuff sparingly because you want it to make it special for them. You don't want to get to the point where it's like, oh, here comes another thing that he made, blah, blah, blah. It should be something kind of special, something every once in a while that you make. And I also think it depends on your group. My group likes it. They think it's kind of cool.
True.
I can't imagine somebody, you know, if it's a special thing, not thinking it was fun. But Nick, Vince,
yes.
I'm really looking forward to hearing what maybe the great Joe DM, did he ever use any?
Actually, the great Joe DM did not use props. Yeah.
The horror.
He was so good in his description, he need not use props. No.
So he wasn't very good at the arts and crafts.
No, yeah, I guess not. No, the great Joe DM actually had brought a dagger once or twice, but nothing major. Mostly because the great Joe DM was on the fly as far as where we gamed in the park. Okay. So yeah, I don't think he was able to bring a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and this is something like when you make it, maybe spend a couple of hours at the most, you know?
If
you have some free time, hour maybe two.
Oh, God.
And just let it sit for a while, you know?
Unless it's what you really have fun doing. I mean, if the part of the fun for you is spending a whole weekend making some prop, just like I was saying before with the NPC dialogue, be careful that you don't make a prop and spend so much time putting so much time into it that if your players never go near it, that you get disappointed.
Right. A good place to get some inspiration from this, at least where I did, was from Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah.
That community is really big on the handouts and the props.
Yeah.
And I think there's some good cross-pollinization that comes over from that to D&D. It does sometimes happen, but it's really big in that particular genre of gameplay, I think I took some of that from there, and it makes the game just a little bit more immersive. So,
yeah.
I mean, now I'm starting to think I'd be really interested if any of our listeners have some ideas about ways to make things, because suddenly I've got a whole new world opening up to me as I think about these. But what about things like engraved rings or daggers with writing on them or you know, some particular amulet, you know, how you would, if there's anybody that knows quick and easy ways to make these things, you know, out of Play-Doh or clay or cardboard or something, you know, that doesn't involve actually.
You know, you never know. Some of the good places to find some of that stuff is if you go to yard sales or garage sales.
Yes.
You know, find some old costume jewelry or some knickknacks here and there.
Flea markets.
I mean, you never know. I took a prop that a company my wife used to work for many years ago. They had these little pyramids with some sort of crystal thing in there. And I used that as a prop. It was I'll get pictures of this and the map I made, and I'll get them out there on the website in the future here. And we had this pyramid.
Send them over after this. Let's put them up. Let's put them up with the show notes.
And so we had this pyramid, and it was they used this pyramid to go into like a little pocket dimension, to where they can basically rest up. It was almost kind of like a Matrix kind of thing in a way.
Sounds like a Zelda thing.
Yeah, so we kind of used this this one prop. They didn't even have to make it. It was laying around. I'm like, I could use that. You know, it's amazing. Like, yeah. I could see this right now. I'm in my bedroom. There's this carved out like falcon or owl. It's like made out of some stone. That could be maybe representative of figurines of wondrous power. Right there. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or you could throw it at your players.
Or throw it at your players.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us how you use your props in your game or handouts in your game. We were interested to know. We'll post them on the website. Also, I want to make a note. Go to the website and comment on the articles the authors have written. There's a couple new ones out there.
Yes, actually, let me go ahead and announce the latest, because as our listeners may or may not know, I hope they know, we have our regular feature every week called Plus Two to Save that Todd Hughes writes, and Todd Hughes, who inspired today's creature feature theater. And so something homage to our giants from the other week, he has coincidentally been writing an Ecology of the Hill Giant, so I think it's particularly excellent. Good. It's up new this week. So please go and read it. Tell us what you think. Leave a comment on the article or anywhere else if you want.
And hopefully I can put it up there real soon. I have the Swamp Giant. I got a write up on it. So we'll put that out there too.
And I believe PC Buzz had a new review of one of the Dragonfoots.org modules.
Cool.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
And that's going to wrap things up for this week. Head over to iTunes. I noticed a lot of people have given us 5-star reviews, and we thank you for that. But we want
thank you.
We want a comment too. If you can just take the extra second to write that comment, that comment is more valuable than the 5-star input I noticed on iTunes.
5 stars.
Yeah, I like 5 stars, but the comment with the 5 stars pushes us up even further.
You can do 5 stars and just type in Peachy Keen, and that'd be great.
You know someone's going to do that now.
Good. Great, I'll do it.
Okay. All right, swell.
And contact us by email, rfistaff@gmail.com, and the RFI hotline, 206-279-3272. As I'm trying to read in the dark here, so I can't see.
And don't forget, we have a mailing address.
That's so right.
I think he's still down in the caverns.
Send things in. Hello. Oh, and by the way, we have had a few people buy T-shirts, so I wanted to say a special thank you to everybody who did, because I know that, you know, money. Yes.
Not just Nick, other people besides Nick.
Tell you, folks. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yes, go on.
No, I just wanted to say that I really appreciate it. You know, the money doesn't come easy. We are doing these through Spreadshirt, which is kind of like a higher quality version of Cafe Press. We're so just really appreciative of the fact that people are willing to, you know, go out and spend their hard-earned money on, you know, something we're really proud of. And if you, the listener, have bought one of these shirts and you want to take a picture of you wearing the shirt, please send it in. We'd love to put you up on the website. And hopefully we'll see you at conventions wearing them too.
Please, and also wear more things than just a shirt too. Don't forget that.
Oh, yeah.
Don't forget to make Jason. Nothing graphic,
pants.
Please.
Wow. But yeah, get the shirts, folks, and they're high quality. I got mine, and I'll be wearing mine in Origins.
Woo!
So,
I'll
be there.
Original illustration just for the show. So really wanted to say thanks again to Hanai for drawing those, because very talented artist. Thank you.
Yep. She is awesome. Wonderful. She's available job. For commissions, and I'm sure she is.
Yes, she is.
And Nick, you wanted to say one last thing, right?
Well, yeah, I just wanted to point out about the t-shirts. That's all I really wanted to say, and hopefully we'll see people at Origins wearing them.
All right, well, that's going to wrap things up, and this is DM Vince signing off for DM Jason and DM Nick, saying keep it original and keep it old school. Good night, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
See you next week.
Roll for initiative.